It is 7:31, time once again for Community Forum, and we're very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning Noam Chayat and Avichai Sharon, who are both former Israel Defense Force combat soldiers. Noam is 26, a biology student at Ben-Gurion University and a veteran of the Elite Combat Patrol Unit of the Nachal Brigade. He was recruited in July 1998 and served as an officer in most of the Palestinian cities, including Jenin, during the Operation Defensive Shield in April 2002. Avichai is 23 and was recruited in July of 2000 and served as a combat soldier and medic in the Igaz, an elite unit within the Golani Brigade. Prior to his military service, Avichai studied in a kibbutz in northern Israel. He will begin study in philosophy and Talmud at Hebrew University next semester. Noam and Avichai, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
You are both part of a organization called Breaking the Silence. I'm wondering if you can tell us about that organization and how and when you got involved with it.
The organization has been working for a year and a half now. It started with the... started one morning when a guy, only now 23 years of age, woke up one morning and couldn't look at himself in the mirror because he saw a monster. And he decided that Hebron, a place where he served for 14 months in the Second Intifada, has to be shown to the Israelis back home. And he put together with a few friends the exhibition that was presented in June 2004 in Tel Aviv, of pictures and video testimonies on Hebron, pictures that were all taken by soldiers during their military service, and video testimonies of some of those soldiers talking, explaining their experiences when they were in Hebron. And it actually just evolved from there. There were many, many visitors. There were almost 8,000 Israelis came to see the exhibition. It was somewhere in Tel Aviv, which 8,000 people in Israel is a lot. And beside politicians, press, and all that, the most important thing was that many, many discharged soldiers that served in different units came to see this. A lot of them even brought their families, and for the first time spoke about their experiences, spoke about their military service. And Noam and I come from different units. We served in all the different areas of the West Bank, and we joined a bit before or during the exhibition. And we found ourselves about 20, 30 guys sitting in a room filled with pictures that for some reason we were feeling very comfortable with, because it was back home for us. And all the other people coming, all the visitors, felt weird. It was scary for them. And I think that that's when it first we first understood that we're not alone. We're a bunch of people. This is the story of our generation. And that it's... it evolved from there. We just decided that we're going to continue this project. We decided to continue interview more soldiers. We've interviewed since then over 300, mostly discharged soldiers. And our mission is to collect these testimonies and make them public as much as possible, make as many people aware of them, in order to raise a true moral debate on as a whole, as society, a moral debate on what are we willing to justify, what are we willing to stand behind, so that everyone can really understand the price that we are paying for every 18 or 19-year-old standing in a checkpoint, going to a Palestinian home, being an occupier. The corruption of being an occupier has to be known.
Prior to your joining this group, did you feel fairly isolated in your viewpoints about what was going on?
No. I think that prior to the group and to the... we just discharged from the army. And soldiers, they don't think. Soldier obey orders. Soldiers give orders. They do what they're told to do. Sometimes you wake up for a few minutes, for a day, and open your eyes, think a little bit, but you can't You can't actually think when you are an occupier. You can't go into people's house. You can't control people in checkpoints. Hundreds of people going home, going to work, going to school. You send them back home. You enter houses in the middle of the night for search operations. You throw the male into one room, the women to the other room. You tear down the house, and you keep in your routine daily life. Day after day, you're standing in posts for 8 hours, 8 hours in, 8 hours out, just controlling the street. You can't really think. So you actually don't have a point of view as a soldier, if to put it in the extreme.
I think that it's important. There's something that still amazes me. I don't think I ever felt isolated. I come from a very open-minded, very pretty liberal home. Even I would say left-wing. And even I, as a teenager, knew that the term occupation corrupts. Yeah, I mean, everyone uses it. Occupation corrupts. And then we continue on our lives. Like, we know the name, we have the right title, so it's okay. And I think that what we're trying, I think that's probably the most important thing that we understood at the starting point, is that it's not enough just to say the right words. You have to know what they mean. You have to know that occupation corrupts, and that's what Breaking the Silence really is. It's trying to show what does that mean? What is the meaning of that phrase, occupation corrupts? It's not enough just to say it when you wake up in the morning and see an article about something bad that happened, and then going to work and everything's okay, because, okay, I know the occupation corrupts, so everything's okay. You have to know what it means. What are the details that are happening when you're saying these words? And because there are people that are doing them, we're sending more and more young people to do them.
It sounds like one of the primary goals of Breaking the Silence is to get the word out on what's really going on to the people of Israel. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So what has been the reaction since this group is formed?
Well, as you can probably understand, there are all kinds of reactions, very, very mixed reactions. The Israeli public, like any society, I believe, is very diverse. There are many, many voices. We have a lot of supporters that without them we would be nowhere. It's all volunteer work, so we need these supporters. There is also, of course, a lot of criticism. The IDF responded when we started the exhibition by coming in, confiscating the video testimonies, taking the founders, those who were presenting the exhibition, to interrogations. And it was an attempt to scare us off, I think. It was an attempt to intimidate us. And it worked on some people, but the project continued. From society that we meet, we've done hundreds of meetings and gatherings with the Israeli public, with teenagers and youth movements in high schools and everywhere we can, in universities we've been. And and a lot of people will say, you're traitors, you're snitches, you're damaging our country, you're showing the ugly sides of our country, you're showing the dirty laundry out to everyone. And there are those that this makes them think, even if it's difficult for them to go through the same process we did. Just to give you one example of the kind of reactions and why they're not enough, in our opinion. About 2 months after we started, after we did the exhibition, there was a story about a sergeant in a checkpoint near Nablus, Hawara checkpoint, that was filmed by the IDF, by the IDF Education Corps, that did a film on the checkpoints to show how good they work. And they went there, and in 18 minutes film, they have three different episodes of abuse, of physical abuse of Palestinians in that checkpoint. And two of them were by the sergeant commanding that checkpoint. By the way, he was a Bedouin, but, you know, a minority I think that's relevant for the next steps of the story. And it was shown, it was exposed, and the IDF right away responded like it does every time that something happens. It's a rotten apple, it's a bad guy, it's an extreme case, we'll take care of it. He was prosecuted, put in jail. And over 60 of his friends from his unit came out with a petition and stood in front of the Ministry of Defense with that petition saying, you exactly knew, all our officers, all our high-ranking officers knew what was going on. We all did this. This was the routine, daily life in those checkpoints. Abuse, humiliation, this happened every day. And you guys knew it. So now you're just using that scapegoat, that sergeant, to clean yourselves clean from this whole corruption, from this whole problem, which is a system problem and not an extreme case. But no one listened to them. That sergeant went into jail. And I think that it's very easy for us to... And society does that every time. Every time they hear something bad, we use the same denial system that we use every day to say, oh, it's the bad guys, it's the rotten apples, but it's not us. It's not the good guys, it's not our kids. Because every mom wants to think that her child is the most cutest and the most sweetest and the most generous guy alive. But it's understanding that in a corrupt reality, there is no way that that same sweet, cute kid will continue to be sweet and cute. Because when you stand at the checkpoint, you control people's lives. When you go into their homes, you control people's lives. When you enforce curfew, you control people's lives. Millions of people.
I want to explain maybe in a few sentences what's the meaning of enforcing curfew when you're an occupier. When the Israeli Defense Force occupies the Palestinian territories. To enforce curfew, and sometimes in certain cities, curfew, Hebron is a good example, was month and month straight. Curfew means nobody leaves home. Not for work, not for school, not for anything. And once every few days, maybe once or twice a week, the Palestinian would have a few hours to go out and buy grocery. The city is dead. People, home is prison. And you, as a soldier, that's your job to enforce it. Now, if anybody is going down the street, of course you stop him, search him, you see that he can't harm anyone, that he has no explosive, that he doesn't belong to any organization that you're fighting against. And then you punish him for being out the street. You detain him. It can be a woman, can be an old man, can be a kid. You detain him for hours, 8 hours, 12 hours, 7 hours, as long as you want. If you see a bunch of them out the street, it's quite hard with a vehicle to come and stop them. So you just throw tear gas and more tear gas. So the whole street is... people are running all over, and then you catch one of them, two of them, punish them by detaining them. And this is curfew. Maybe I'll tell you what a checkpoint is. Sometimes checkpoints are very easy to justify because they stop people who want to fight Israel. They stop what we call terrorists to cross the green line into Israel. But these are just some of the checkpoints. Most of the checkpoints are within the Palestinian territories, between villages, blocking the entrance and the exits from the cities. So you can't really go between two villages or two cities. If you want to go to work, you will probably be stopped three times. Your car, all the things of your car. Imagine you wake up one morning going to work here in the station. You go out from your house. After a few hundred feet just by your house, you're stopped. Everything from your car is being taken out. You're searched physically. Your kids that are on the way to school maybe are also searched. They see their father being humiliated. Not even hit. Not even by... the soldier are not always mean and do it on purpose, humiliating. But stopping you, checking you, taking off your clothes in the middle of the winter in the street... And it's not only you, it's a line of car, all your neighbors, all the people you know, behind you. And now you go, you drive a few streets, You want to go out of the village or the city, and you're stopped again. And the same procedure. But then the order changes. You don't know it, but the checkpoint knows it. The sergeant in the checkpoint decides or gets an order that you go back home and you don't go to work today. This is controlling people. And if you get pissed off and you shout at the sergeant, he can take your car key and detain you for 5 hours. And your kids will be waiting with you in the car. If it's a different sergeant, he will slap you. But this is very easy to criticize those who would slap you. And this is not what we're talking about. We're not talking about the cases of humiliating on purpose. We're talking about the daily routine life of 18, 19, 20 years old soldiers controlling a whole society. The defensive shield operation. The radio, if you listen to the radio, it sounds like a very heroic fighting against terrorism. What did we really do in the Palestinian territories? What did the Army of Israel, which we raised upon the notion as teenagers that we that is the most moral army in the world, that is the army that defenses, re-arrested anyone between the age of 16 to the age of 60 in a refugee camp? Some of them were brought back after a week, after a few hours, after a day, after a month. They've been interrogated, they've been questioned, many of the times not gently. And I just imagine how would I react if my father, that every day would raise me up, that the other side, the other people are there are many of them that we can live in peace with, and it's not that everybody hates us and you should be optimistic. I want to imagine what would I how would I react if I would see this father of mine being arrested by 20 soldiers in the middle of the night, if it would be the opposite way around. I wouldn't be optimistic, even though if I would raise in the most left-wing believers, dreamer family. If somebody would detain my father, I wouldn't be optimistic. I wouldn't be raised believing in peace. And this is what we're doing, in our opinion, by occupying, is creating hatred, is bringing about more and more hatred to the region. And this is not a way, in our opinion, maybe it stops explosives. Maybe we found guns. But we create hatred, and hatred does the opposite.
So a lot of what you're trying to get people to focus on is that what you're opposed to are these policies, these across-the-board policies. It isn't just the, you know, the bad apples. It's policies that are coming down both from the government, upper military, and inevitably from the people who run the government. You know, the people, the citizens, are in the end responsible.
That's a good point. Just to give you an example, the difference between the different campaigns and different testimonies we've exposed in the public. In the past, there was a big campaign on checkpoints, and we were also part of that campaign, exposing testimonies of the checkpoints and how abusive and humiliation and the humiliation that happens there, and soldiers talking about their experience of being at the checkpoints, and there was a massive campaign in the media of talking about this, exposing this, and it was very easy for some people because it was exposing stories, showing soldiers that are abusing, showing soldiers that are destroying property in checkpoints, taking car keys, and the IDF even had to respond, which doesn't happen a lot, and came out with a new course and admitted that they have a problem with the checkpoints. This doesn't happen. And they came out with a new course to for commanders of checkpoints so that they'll be better at the checkpoints, which in my opinion is ridiculous, because you can't be a nice occupier and tell 3,000 people going through your checkpoint if they'll go to work or won't go to work. And the last campaign that we did was on a totally different issue, was a showing, a exposure of a massive collection of testimonies on the rules of engagement. Policy decisions, procedures, orders, not a sergeant that freaked in his post after 8 hours, not an 18-year-old going into a house, seeing something nice and taking it. Things that for the public, they could categorize them very easily as rotten apples and we're okay, everything's okay, the system's okay. But systematic procedures, orders, and these testimonies, you will find orders such as revenge raids, decisions to launch revenge attacks against Palestinian officers, against Palestinian innocent Palestinians that had nothing to do with attacks that were committed against IDF. And just to launch these revenge attacks, they took 6 of ours, and this is a quote from the briefing. They took 6 of ours, we're going to take 6 of theirs. And the next morning you wake up and 15 Palestinian officers are dead all around the West Bank and Gaza. You will find, and these are not things that a sergeant or even a lieutenant decides. This came right from the top. This came from the chief of staff, from the government. You will find procedures that do not even attempt to distinguish armed from unarmed Palestinians, to shoot at everyone walking down the street, to shoot at everyone on balconies or on rooftops, because maybe they're looking at us. Maybe she just went out to dry the laundry. Maybe this guy just went out to smoke a cigarette because he's under curfew for a month and he didn't leave the house. But that doesn't matter. We're shooting everyone. And this was exposed in the most popular newspaper in Israel. It was exposed also in foreign newspapers. It was exposed in another newspaper in Israel in a different article. But nothing happened. Nothing besides those articles happened. No, because there is no, that is part of the corruption that we have gone through and the apathy that we are in, is that we have ceased to criticize ourselves. We have ceased to inspect ourselves. And it's much, much, much easier to criticize a specific 19-year-old, especially if he's a minority, to criticize a specific 19-year-old and say, oh, he's a rotten apple, we'll take care of him, than to criticize ourselves as a country, as a system, and to really look at ourselves in the mirror and say, wow, we're corrupt. We see monsters when we look in the mirror.
You might ask yourself what we're doing here. Why did we come all the way to the States? So one of the reasons would be what Avichai just said, that there are things that people just can't criticize back home. Things that are too systematic, too hard to society to criticize. I will quote the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Israel. He will help me out here. He said a few months ago that the most powerful asset, or the most powerful weapon, to simplify, of Israel, or of the Defense Force of Israel, is the public opinion of the United States. And unfortunately, I agree. I think that there are circles of responsibility. What we are doing in breaking the silence as former IDF soldiers, former Israeli soldiers in the occupied territories, is to awareness in order to, so that people will take responsibility for what is being done in their name. So the first circle of responsibility is ourselves, the soldiers themselves, the officers of the IDF that served, that are serving, that are now this night humiliating, breaking into houses, controlling people without civil rights, not people in another country that attacked us and we're now defending the border, people that have no civil right and living under military occupation. So the first circle of responsibility is the same soldier that are actually doing it. The second circle would be, if I'm the first one, would be my parents as a generation that have sent me there, that throws me up on the notion that in my society, in my army, these things can be, cannot be. that we have the most moral army in the world. And this is the Israeli society. And I think that another circle, probably the third one, if to go back to the quote, is the people in the United States. People that their public opinion immunes us, for people that help us against criticism that we get from other countries. People that, because of supporting Israel, and we would like people to support Israel, we support Israel, we want to live there peacefully one day, but do not criticize the bad sides of Israel, do not criticize the moral issues of the occupation. And we, as a soldier, even the army itself is totally supported, equipped, being paid by. So each one should understand what's his responsibility and what can he do, what can one do, in order to, if he can justify what is being done, partly in his name. And there is many ways to go and check the information.
I think that I want to just add to Noam that Noam and I came from Israel just 2 weeks ago. It's the only country we have. It's the only citizenship we have. It's the only country I want to raise my kids in. And people have to understand that this is a self-destructive process for both sides. And if we're not strong enough to look at ourselves in the mirror, to criticize ourselves, to see those dark, ugly, black spots that we have every day when we look in the mirror, and deal with that, then we're not going to go anywhere. I'm not going to have a place that I could be proud of to raise my kids in 20 years. And that's why we're here. We're here to enable all those people like us that love the country, that want to support the country. We're here to enable them to do this so that we can have a good country. And like Noam said, the information is out there. People have to just search for it. You have to look for the details, because it won't, you know, it doesn't exist in the headlines in the newspapers. It doesn't exist in the radio news flashes. It's not there. You have to look for it. You have to listen to the stories of the soldiers. You have to listen also to the stories of Palestinians. You have to listen to these stories through all the different organizations that document what is really happening on the ground to people.
And one of those places people can get more information is the Breaking the Silence website, which is breakingthesilence.org.il.
Yeah.
And probably the even better place to get information is you're both speaking locally here at least two more times while you're in town in Seattle. One of those will be this evening from 7 to 10 p.m. at the University Friends Center, which is at, I believe, 4009 on 9th Avenue Northeast in the University District. And then tomorrow night, you're speaking, tomorrow afternoon actually, from 4 to 6 p.m., at the University Unitarian Church, which is at 65th and 35th Avenue Northeast. Both those locations are here in Seattle. So, and I believe you're going to be showing some slides as well as talking and doing some questions and answers.
We're showing some of the pictures that were used in the exhibition and some more pictures that were taken from all over the West Bank, all pictures taken by soldiers, not journalists, not photographers, and trying to show the stories behind these pictures from our personal experience and through the camera.
All right. Well, I want to thank you very much for both coming in this morning.
Thank you.
We have just been talking with Noam Chayat and Avichai Sharon, both former Israeli Defense Force veterans. And again, you can find out more about their work through the website, which is breakingthesilence.org.il. And again, they're speaking today from 7 to 10 p.m. at University Friends Center, and then tomorrow late afternoon, early evening, from 4 to 6 p.m. at University Unitarian Church at 65th and 35th Avenue Northeast.